Thank you, Mr. Cordelieu, and good afternoon to all of you. I'll get right into it. Usually I start with a story, but I didn't have time for a story with this one. The fifth commandment tells us to honor our father and mother. I want to go have a look at it in Exodus chapter 20, if you'll go there with me. A lot of times I have an opportunity to tell a story that kind of introduces it, but I just really, for some reason, couldn't come up with the one for this one. There are probably a number of stories that could be told, but I didn't think of one to use this time. Let's go to Exodus 20 and verse 12, because that's where we find the commandments given to us by God through Moses. Exodus 20 and verse 12. It says, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God gives you." That your days may be long upon the land that the Lord your God gives you. We don't often just read through the commandments. Maybe we ought to read through them a little more often. But it's with these thoughts in mind that I thought I would approach the subject of the fifth commandment and honoring our father and mother today. Spend a little time, maybe a little more detail than we've had an opportunity to do so in the past. Sometimes we cover certain commandments. Oftentimes we talk about the fourth commandment and the Sabbath day frequently. I usually give at least one sermon a year on that. But there are a number of things that we could talk about. This is one that doesn't get addressed quite as often, I don't think, in terms of each of the commandments. And I've promised the congregations that I would try to finish my series on the Ten Commandments, which I started about 3 years ago, I think, maybe a little further back than that. And I'm finally at the fifth one, so I'm not making an awful lot of ground. But I'm going to try to do a couple of them before this year is out, at least, to kind of catch up a little bit. There are those who sometimes are looking for reinforcement of things in the Old Testament, and they tend to want to look for them in the New Testament, or to see to it that they're mentioned again in the New Testament, because some people, at least in this world, sometimes tend to view anything in the Old Testament as if it's not specifically mentioned in the New Testament, it hasn't been renewed, or it isn't something that we need to worry about. And that's a sad way to look at the Bible in many ways, because the covenants do interlock in many ways. I have a whole sermon I could probably go through and talk about just how the covenants interlock and fit together. I don't know that I've given it here, but maybe that's one I should do as well. The Ten Commandments were clearly a portion of the Old Covenant. That's one of the things that one of the emphasis points that was made many years ago in our former organization when they wanted to do away with the commandments by doing away with the Old Covenant. So they felt, well, because they're part of the Old Covenant, we can do away with them if we do away with the Old Covenant. And, of course, you can see in various scriptures that the Old Covenant is wasting away, as it's referred to, or it is disappearing. It isn't done yet, but it's mentioned in Hebrews that it is wasting away. And so they tend to take that concept and say, if it's part of the Old Covenant, then we can get rid of them and we don't have to keep them anymore, which is a silly assumption. They are certainly part of the Old Covenant, and we know that everything in the Old Covenant is explicitly and or implicitly bound in the New Covenant. But most people don't understand that point. Unless it is specifically removed or specifically deleted and it's signed off in the presence of both parties, God and his people, both, it isn't removed. Nothing's taken away. And things can be added to the new contract or the new covenant, whichever you would like to call it. Both parties, it isn't necessary for both parties to, in a way, sign off on anything that's done away with. In the contracts and agreements, everybody knows that every item in an old contract that is being replaced by a new contract is present in the new contract unless it is specifically lined out and initialed out by both parties and the consent of both parties. And I can think of only one contract change that has occurred between the old and the new covenants. And it's listed very clearly in the book of Daniel. And if you'll turn there with me, I can show it to you. It's in Daniel 9 and verse 27. So if you're looking to for exceptions of what's disappeared out of the old, or what's disappeared in the new covenant that used to be in the old, this is the only thing really that there is to find. There are one or two other items that take too much discussion to talk about, but I won't go into those. Daniel 9:27. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he will cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Two things cease between the covenants. The sacrifices, obviously, because Jesus Christ is the supreme sacrifice, there is no comparison between him and animals. And the animal sacrifices. So the animal sacrifices are no longer necessary once Christ died and was cut off in the midst of the week. We believe he died on a Wednesday. And the oblation. Those two things cease, or those two things are not carried over from the old into the new. Jesus Christ, the testator of both of these covenants, had to die as part of the fulfillment of these contracts in order, he had to die as the fulfillment of the contracts in order to fulfill a number of things. As a result of the change between the two contracts or the covenants, Christ's death, two things no longer need to occur. One of them, of course, is the sacrifice, and the other one is the oblation. First, the animal sacrifice is no longer required. Obviously, Jesus Christ's sacrifice is far superior to animals and is really the only blood that counts when it comes to forgiveness of sin. Secondly, the King James uses an old English word, oblation. What's an oblation? Well, oblation is actually the old English word for an offering. And it comes from the Hebrew word minicha. And minicha means gift, tribute, offering. But here, it's more of an offering that is given to God. It is referring to the entire temple system of the offerings and sacrifices. These two things are no longer a part of the New Testament, no longer part of the New Covenant. Finding a specific exemption like this one means everything else in the Old Covenant is still active. It's still in force. A lot of people don't realize that or accept that or understand it. Now think about that for a few minutes. Obviously, there are a few other exceptions. One of the things that I can think of that is an exception is some of the specific statutes or judgments that Moses gave to Israel were based on the fact that Israel was a country of itself. It was a government of its own people. Today we live under other governments. The church is not the government that governs our actions and our daily lives in terms of the laws of the land. Now then, Israel had its own laws of the land, and some of those were given by Moses, some given by God through Moses, to ancient Israel, and some of those things are no longer applicable today. We are not, as a church or church members, obligated to go out and hunt down the murderer of our brother and put him to death. Obviously, some of those things belong in the realm of current governments today, so they're not applicable to us today because we are not a government as a church. That's one of the things that, one of the additional things that may have disappeared from some of the things we find in the Old Testament. Now, let's get back to the fifth commandment. If you're looking for a New Testament reinstitution or reinforcing of the fifth commandment, let's turn over to Matthew chapter 15, because I think we can find it there, although it doesn't say it specifically in the words of the fifth commandment. Matthew chapter 15. And verse 4. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 4. It said, "For God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death." Christ is reciting and talking about some of the commands that God had given, and he's mentioning them here. and obviously reinforcing or restating them. When parents are loved and respected, it does a great deal toward family unity. And perhaps we should begin with a study of the word honor, because that's what the commandment says. It says to honor your father and your mother. Let's talk about understanding honor a little bit. The dictionary definition of the word honor would tell us several meanings for the word. I'll try to pick out the ones that are probably most applicable here. It's a word that's sometimes difficult to get your arms around. And it's difficult, I found, to get my arms around it in the Greek word for it, timē, as well. It's difficult to understand all that's involved in it in Greek as well as in English. I'll pick the definitions that are probably the most useful to us today in terms of understanding the commandment. It means a good name or reputation, outward respect. One's worth brings respect or fame, or one whose worth brings respect or fame. A person of superior standing. One of integrity. Giving homage, reverence, or obeisance. Conferring distinction. So honor can have to do a number of those things, and I might add that Greek adds a few other definitions as well. That's one of those. Usually Greek words are pretty specific, but sometimes they get a little overused and they become a little general, and then you find you've got a whole bunch of definitions of one word. Hebrew's like that, but Greek, at least they manage to keep the numbers of definitions to each word down to a smaller number. But in the case of honor, it seems to have expanded there as well. We see in Jesus Christ the perfect reflection of a son toward a father. His desire was to be just like his father, just as any child's is. And in that sense, he was. And he often said, "My will is to do the will of him who sent me." And his will was set to carry out his father's will. This perhaps shows the greatest degree of honor that a son can reflect on a father or mother, to be like them, to carry out their will. Notice, let's turn over to Psalms for a moment. Psalm chapter 40. Psalm chapter 40 and verse 7. Psalm chapter 40 and verse 7. It says, "Then said I, Lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me." Now, I want to read to you verses 6 through 8, because these three verses, when put together, are kind of interesting. Verse 6, "Sacrifice and offering you did not desire. My ears have you opened. Burnt offering and sin offering have you not required. Then said I, Lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me, I delight to do your will, O my God. Yes, your law is within my heart." Now, I want you to think about those three verses, because the tradition has it that these were the final words of Jesus Christ as he said them to his Father before he was reduced into a tiny fertilized ovum in the womb of Mary. Now, if you understand that behind these three verses, what he says here really makes a tremendous amount of sense in terms of what he was doing and what he was about to do. Now, I don't know that that's the case. Tradition has it, but I don't know that that is necessarily the case. But when you read these three verses and you think about what Christ was about to do, and we call that act the incarnation, or the making of God into flesh, that that's what he thought, or those were his words, spoken or otherwise, or communicated to his father at that point. And if the tradition is true, it certainly has a great deal of meaning. Israel was a type of woman or mother of many children in the Old Testament. Israel was betrothed but not married to God in the covenant process at Mount Sinai in the Old Testament. Because of disobedience, of course, and adultery, having to do with other gods, Israel separated herself or divorced herself from God. And this was unfaithfulness, which is mentioned by Jesus Christ in the New Testament as cause for divorce. For hundreds of years, Israel went on her own way through the majority of the Old Testament, not following God, not obeying God. And under the New Testament, or the New Covenant, God will take Israel, the spiritual church, back as his bride at his return. Those who are spiritually ready for that event, that is, not necessarily everyone, but certainly those who are ready at that point, will be taken as his bride, and they'll be brought into his kingdom. It's a difficult thing being a parent. A very difficult thing, and they certainly deserve honor for it. All of us who have parents, which is, I think, just about all of us, have an obligation to honor our parents. Sometimes we may forget that there is a physical and a spiritual side to this commandment, just as there are to all of the other nine commandments as well. And part of that spiritual side is that our spiritual father is God. And secondly, our spiritual mother is the church. Sometimes we forget that. In the Old Testament, it was physical Israel. In the New Testament, it's the New Testament church. And I think you see the immediate spiritual implications of either one. I think we know we are to respect and honor God, but we also have to think about our obligation and our respect and honor to the body of Christ, the church. There is honor expected there too. But have you ever thought about your duty to the body of Christ, to the church, in terms of honoring a parent? One thing I find that is often lacking in the spiritual behavior of independent churches is a lack of respect for the mother of the church. It's often missing, not there. And that's a sad thing that that's the case. No church or minister is ever going to tell me what to do again. I don't know if you've heard that or you've heard that from some people in the past, but sometimes that reflects a lack of honor, a lack of respect for the church, doesn't it? A small child may do something similar to that as they grow up with a parent. Or I'm not going to do what you tell me to do. Sometimes little children will say that to their parents, and of course they find out rather rapidly that's probably not going to be the case, but they do sometimes say things like that, and it's a very immature attitude, isn't it? Well, it's an immature attitude in a spiritual sense when we do that to our mother, the church, as well. Enough said. But think about that very seriously. I think God says he hates rebellion, doesn't he? And is that not what such an attitude portrays, whether it's in a small child saying it to their parents or whether it's an adult saying it to the church? Same thing. We certainly call it that with children. Perhaps it may not be that blatant. Sometimes it's only an undercurrent of thinking. But if it's there at all, I think you're kind of standing on dangerous ground when you live that way. Mothers and fathers are due a great deal more love, honor, and respect than they have probably been given in the past. Both from a physical and a human standpoint, in terms of our physical parents, from a spiritual standpoint, in terms of our relationship with God and with the church. In a physical sense, after all that parents have sometimes gone through, the relationship that they have their children, it's important to be respectful. It's important to convey honor to our parents. There's an interesting little quote that I found here. It says, "The joys of motherhood are never fully experienced until the children are in bed." Now, that's kind of a funny, humorous little bit, although humorous hopefully isn't necessarily true. Although it may certainly be a welcome relief sometimes, but it's something we have to think about. There's a little bit of humor that goes along with family relations, I think that all can appreciate. But it goes for fathers as well, and I think we can all appreciate a little bit of humor when it comes to parents and children and families and their relationships. I want to introduce you to an idea here, and that's called honor throughout life. Honor throughout your life. Honor throughout your life. You could probably write a book by that title if you were writing a book about the fifth commandment. Something else we should consider. We must also give our father and mother honor in the way we live, in our life, in our lifestyle. Whether we want to be this way or not, the way we live is a reflection upon our parents. Whether we want it to be or not, the way we live is a reflection on our parents. So if you really want to honor your father and mother, you should live in a way that they would be proud of, right? You have to live an honorable life. And I have another interesting quote here. One day in this particular book I happened to have found this in, several convicts were sitting in the prison library, and they were flipping through a magazine, kind of a merchandise type of magazine, and it had various things in there for sale, and it had houses and cars and clothing and all kinds of stuff, and they were kind of going through this particular catalog, at least two of them were, and a picture of a lovely home came up, and one of the prisoners said, "Man, I sure wish I could give my mother a house like that to live in." And the other prisoner said to him, and he said, "No," he said, "the car that's parked in front," he says, "I want to give my mom a car like that, and then she could come see me once in a while," visit him in prison. Then the two men noticed that their friend, Bill, was sitting there staring at the magazine, and so they asked him to say what he'd like to give to his mother. And after thinking for a few minutes, he looked at them with tears in his eyes, and he said in a sorrowful tone, he said, "I wish I could give my mother a more honorable son." A more honorable son. The young man was obviously grieved about the fact that his dishonorable life and actions had dishonored his mother. And it's a tragedy, but prisons are often full of dishonorable children. And they don't learn that until later in life. God has endured and is enduring a great deal to bring us successfully into his family. That's his desire. And with our physical faults and weaknesses, I'm sure he has his hands full in many ways, much like we have sometimes have our hands full with a lot of children. He's our father. He is, you know, the mother of the church as well, the people of God. All of these things are extremely important to understanding the concepts of honor. Each are deserving of our honor. Each are deserving of respect. And this means the leaders of the church and the brethren are deserving of our respect and love as well. I'm sure whether we are children, teenagers, adults, that we would all like to improve our relationships with our parents and practice the fifth commandment as we should. We all have a desire to do that. So let me offer some steps, I think some things to think about in terms of honoring. What does this concept of honoring mean? How do we go about this, or what steps do we take to really show honor to our parents? The first thing I wrote down is to be thankful. To be thankful. God certainly appreciates it when we're thankful to him for all the things that he's done for us, for all the things that he is in the process of doing in our lives. How much more appreciative do you think your parents will be if you're thankful to your parents for some of the things that you have and you do? Let's go over to 1 Thessalonians for a moment. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 18. Apostle Paul expresses this. He says, "In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." In everything give thanks. Learn to thank your parents for little things, especially if you're still living with them. There's multiple opportunities to be thankful and to offer thanks. For teens, using the words thank you a little more often is certainly something to strive for, and you might find that there's a little more favor bestowed in your direction when you use the word thank you a little more often as well, and you might find that's a good thing. And when you borrow or use your parents' things, if you take good care of those things, then you are in effect saying thank you as they're given to you. by taking good care of them. That's a way of saying thank you when you borrow them. Not that you shouldn't say thank you too, but that's a way of saying thank you. Be appreciative of what they have done for you all of your life. Not just recent things, not just something they did for you today, but all the things that parents do for you all of your life. For most of us, our parents have gone through very, very difficult times with us at one time or another, at various points in our lives. There is a saying that some people complain because God put thorns on roses. Other people praise him for putting roses among the thorns. So it's your perspective about being thank you, or about gratitude, has a lot to do with paying thanks to others, and especially to parents. Gratitude is an attitude and a perspective on things. We can look at our upbringing in a negative light, or and look at all the mistakes that our parents made in bringing us up or raising us or rearing us, and we can see what a grand job they did or what a terrible job they did, depending on your perspective. And certainly the better perspective is to look at it and realize that they did do a wonderful job with God's help in terms of rearing most of us. The more you complain, or maybe I should read this. Some friends of ours who are elderly have a refrigerator magnet on their refrigerator, and it says on it, "The more you complain, the longer God will let you live." Now, I'm not saying that God is sadistic. I'm just saying that sometimes we need to learn some lessons that maybe we haven't learned. And oftentimes complaining doesn't solve a problem. It just aggravates it or makes it go on because we haven't really dealt with it. And certainly there's some truth to that, I think. Complaining about things do not solve things. So sometimes God has to let us live a little longer until we figure out that it's something we need to solve. And we need to deal with those things, not just complain about them. And if you've moved out and you're on your own, then the way to be thankful is, comes another way of being thankful is something that I've labeled as step number two, which is to communicate. To communicate. It has been said that conversation is the test of a man. Communication is the test of our relationship with God. It is the test of our relationship with our parents as well. And if we never talk to them, then we do not honor them. Now, if you've left home and you've moved out of their home, then communicate your thanks to them when they've done things for you in your life. Say things are warm, say things that are warm and that are appreciative to them. Send them a card, write them regularly, let them know what's happening in your life. Those are all parts and mechanisms for communicating. Take them into your confidence about your life. Ask their advice about things. All those are part of this concept of communicating with the parents. That is a way of honoring them. They want to know what's going on in your life. They've spent most of their lives helping you get a good start in life already, so communicating with them is honoring them. They've done far more than just rear and feed and clothe and educate and house you. They've done many more things than that. They've taught you most of your moral values. They say that you form, and I believe the percentage, if I've got it right, is 80%. You form 80% of the moral values that you will have for the rest of your life by the time you're 7 years old. Now, where do you think you're getting most of those values between the age of 1 and 7? From your parents. They're the primary movers in your life up until the age of 7. That's a lot of values that we form. And the chances are your parents have helped influence most of your values. And the values are that you're going to use for the rest of your life on judgments and decisions that you will make for the rest of your days. And they're all done in just the first few years of your life under the guidance and tutelage of your parents generally. By the age of 7, you've only had, maybe a year or so of schooling, maybe 2 at the most. So there's not too much influence in your life other than that of your parents at that point. Don't be afraid to say you are sorry to your parents, too. That's part of communicating. Sometimes we tend to get a little short-tempered with those that we love the most when they're the ones we should be the most patient with, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we say things we don't mean or things that hurt those that we love the most. And these things are far more likely to happen with close relatives or family than almost with anyone else. Partly because we spend more time with family, maybe, than others, and we are more relaxed, a little less inhibited around family. But nonetheless, communicate your feelings to your parents and apologize when those feelings aren't very nice. Third point, third aspect of honoring is to be considerate. To be considerate. There's a funny story from Irma Bombeck's Family Ties That Bind and Gag, her book, page 28 and 29. Irma talks about her husband's treatment of her family when it came to various utility bills. Irma has nothing on my father. He's now deceased, but my dad used to get very upset about lights left on in the house. During the time when he was paying the tab on the phone bill, he would start saying goodbye at about 3 minutes into the phone call. He did it as a joke for a while, but we got the idea. Yes, Dad's paying the bill, so we better hustle this up and get said what we need to say. But he would say funny stuff like that, you know, like whenever there was a lull in the conversation, he'd say, "Well, goodbye." And everybody would just go right on talking and ignore him. But he teased us about that for quite a while. Let me read you from the Gospel of the Utilities, according to Dad. We refer to my dad as the Prince of Darkness. He kind of came unglued when he found a light on and no one in the room. And my dad used to walk around the house constantly turning out lights in rooms with no one in them and turning off water spigots in the bathroom and things like that. The first sermonette I think I ever heard my dad give was one at home where he was lecturing us about the benefits of turning things off and how they do cost money, regardless of what you may think. He went on for quite a while about that. My wife used to say I'd turned into my dad, and I think I have. I do the same thing. But now I'm starting to forget a light here and there in the house that I've turned on. That used to never happen. Anyway, let me quote from his Gospel of the Utilities. He said he had several commandments that I have passed on to my family too as well. They are to be honored. Thou shalt not turn on any light switch unto thee which thou dost not need. Thou shalt hang up the phone when thou hast been on it long enough for the rates to change. Thou shalt not stand in front of the refrigerator door waiting for something to dance. Thou shalt remember last month's heating bill, and thou shalt close the door behind thee when thou goest in or comest out. Thou shalt not adjust the thermostat unless pneumonia has set in. Thou shalt remember last month's electric bill and rejoice in darkness. Thou shalt not covet the rest of thy family's hot water. These things thou shalt do that thou mayest honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long in thy father's house. Anyway, my dad would have loved that. I don't know whether he ever saw that or not before he died. I had a nephew, still have a nephew, and he has an interesting story. When he was a boy, he was probably 7 or 8, I guess, when this particular incident occurred, but he loved to save up his allowance for certain toys, and he would not spend that money for anything but those toys, and get very upset if he had to spend any of his allowance for anything other than a particular toy that he wanted to have. But he was also notorious for walking into rooms and leaving light switches on and walking through the house and just leaving lights and things on everywhere he went. And it drove his dad, a very close friend of mine, my brother-in-law, kind of nuts about, you know, they didn't know what to do. They couldn't figure it out. I think my wife suggested this. She said, well, why don't you just charge him 5 cents or 10 cents every time he leaves the light switch on? Of course, there was great agony and tears the first couple of times this occurred, but it did not occur more than two, maybe three times, I think, because he was so tight about his allowance, he couldn't stand to have to give up any of this as a penalty for a light switch that he had left on. So it was an interesting lesson to him. He learned not to leave the light switches on. It was an interesting story about what happened to him when he was little. What's the lesson here? Well, being considerate of our parents, of course, if we live under their roof especially, is something that we need to do in order to honor them. You know, we need to abide by their rules. We need to be courteous to their needs and desires, even if they are perhaps a little eccentric at times. Like, my dad was a little eccentric, and I'm probably a little eccentric about the light switches too, but that's just something you grow up with. There's an interesting quote. Although your mother's patience may be like a tube of toothpaste, in that it never is quite gone, don't push her to the limit. With toothpaste, you can always get out a little more with a hammer and a pair of ice grips. But don't push or don't abuse or push your parents' patience to the limit. That's not honoring them. An interesting quote from a book that I found as well, quite humorously done. Obviously, Scottish family were trying to get a little more out of the toothpaste, too. Anyway, if we no longer live with them or in their household, then we need to consider some special ways to be considerate. You know, sending Mom Mother's Day cards, those kinds of things. Sometimes we get a little negligent about writing to them or communicating with them or calling them occasionally, those kinds of things. Those are all part of being considerate. Those are all part of communicating with parents, especially when we're not living with them. Send them some flowers. Go visit your dad if he's still alive. You know, those are good things to do. Go see them. Unless they're extremely hostile toward you because of the church and your beliefs, I would make plans to try to get together with them as often as you can. Even if they are extremely hostile, it seldom lasts as long as we think it will sometimes. I've had hostile relatives before when I was growing up. A lot of the relatives that my parents had at the time, aunts and uncles and others, were pretty hostile to us about things for a while. But the heat dissipates pretty quickly. Within a few years, you know, a lot of the harshness and the anger or whatever about some of the things we did and what we were doing all dissipated, and we were able to get together with them again and spend time with them. So in a year or two, the whole situation could change entirely. It might take more than a year or two, but sometimes it can be done. We do want to remain on good terms with relatives as best we can. Which brings me to point number four, which is to be forgiving. To be forgiving. We probably have no idea how many times our parents have prayed for patience with us. And probably had no idea how often our parents prayed for patience and forgiveness and mercy, those kinds of things that we needed when we were little, until we had children of our own. And then we discovered how often they probably did have to pray. I'm thankful that my parents taught me how to pray. That's something to be thankful for, too, because now I need to pray for patience and forgiveness for my children. Now that they're grown, they will have to do the same for their children one day as well. There was an interesting quote. It said, down through the ages, no nation has ever had a better friend than the mother who taught her children to pray. And certainly it goes for more than just mothers. It goes for fathers as well. And that's a very true statement, but it reflects the forgiveness our parents have shown toward us. Fathers can certainly teach their children how to pray just as well as mothers. But that was an outside quote that I found, and they were quoting it about mothers. Would that there were more politicians who prayed. Wouldn't that be nice? Whether your parents were in the church or not, they probably had to pray for patience and forgiveness when it came to their children. Or they probably ended up being abusive in some way. Unfortunately, there are a few of those cases. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Or they probably ended up, we'll talk about that a little bit later here in a minute. Don't just ignore what I have to say here, even if your parents have been abusive. Sometimes we tend to, if we've had abusive parents, we sometimes tend to want to just shove all these things aside and say, no, I don't, that doesn't apply, because my parents were abusive in some way. That's not necessarily true. As we grow older, we have to exercise patience, and we have to exercise forgiveness of them, just like anyone else. The fifth, and that brings me kind of to the fifth way that we'll talk about that, but I'll talk about abuse a little bit later. Let's go to the fifth way that we honor our parents, and that is by being helpful. Being helpful. And I have a quote here. It says, a mother or father is not a person to lean on, but a person to make leaning unnecessary. Kind of an interesting way to put it. Your parents probably spent most of their lives helping you. We should be learning to return help to them as they grow older, and as they are in more need of it. As they grow older with age, and we grow older with age, they sometimes need the help that they once gave us. Sometimes it means helping them out a little financially. Sometimes, it, you know, in other ways, it depends on what the need happens to be. Let's go to Matthew chapter 15 for a moment. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 1. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 1. I'll read through 1 through 6 here, actually. Then the scribes and the Pharisees, who were from Jerusalem, came to Jesus, saying, why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread. He answered and said to them, why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your traditions? And then he introduces something here about honoring parents. He says, for God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profits you might have received from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition. And here we see, I think, an example of the Pharisees and how they did certain things in terms of their traditions that allowed someone to give as much money to the temple offering box as they wanted to give. Even if their parents had need of some of that money, they could give it all away to the temple, and they suffered no guilt, so to speak. Well, it's kind of like saying, I'd rather not give this money to mom and dad because I want to put it to better use. Christ was condemning that attitude as certainly not being honorable to parents and dishonoring them and breaking of the fifth commandment. Have we ever said that when our parents or our family members, for that matter, are in need? I hope not, because that is, according to Christ, breaking the fifth commandment. I'm not saying that we should just provide everything and whatever mom needs. If she's wanting a little extra money to put the deluxe hubcaps on her Mercedes, I don't think she probably needs that. But we do need to offer help as it's needed. Jesus Christ condemned the Pharisees for their failure to provide for their parents' needs. They were not doing that. And they're, you know, not necessarily their desires, but certainly their needs. Needs are classified as food, clothing, shelter, the basic necessities of life. And certainly if we have it, a little bit more too, if that's possible, to help them. Let's talk about a sixth way to honor our parents. And that is by encouraging them. Encouraging them to be positive. As people grow older, oftentimes they get a little more crotchety, a little more pessimistic, I guess, in some ways, in terms of their treatment of life and their attitude toward life and toward those around them. And sometimes we have to kind of point them in the optimistic direction a little bit and show them that life doesn't need to be quite so pessimistic. things don't need to be as bad as they think they are, or they're making them out to be, don't let them to be. Don't let them be grumpy. Don't let them be always thinking negative. Kind of focus them on the positive a little bit. Even if you have to be Mr. Total Optimist around them whenever you're around them in order to get them to be a little more redirected toward being positive, and to keep them from allowing their attitude to degenerate into pessimism. Sometimes that happens as we get older. We get a little more grumpy about things. Doesn't mean we should let that happen, though. If you are a child or you are a teenager and you're still living with your parents, part of encouraging them is to also be obedient, to be obedient to them. That's encouraging. And this helps them view you and your plans and in a positive light rather than a negative light, doesn't it? I have another quote here. It says, "I'm sure that we don't have any teens this bad off, but I was reading about a mom in Colorado the other day that is so ashamed of her unruly kids that she attends the local PTA meetings under an assumed name." I laughed when I read that. I hope that's really not true, but it's kind of funny to say it, but it isn't true. We certainly hope it isn't true. It's hard for your parents to be positive and encouraging about their relationship with their children if their children are terribly behaved, isn't it? It makes it difficult. So don't make it difficult for your parents. The seventh way that I've got here for us to honor our parents is to ask for their advice. Wow. Ask for their advice. Ask your parents for an opinion about things. You may learn that they've formed those opinions by years of experience that are far beyond yours. And this is especially true if you've not yet left your parents' home. They will expect you to ask for advice if you're a teenager. You need their advice if you are a teen. If you're an adult, then you will probably benefit from their advice, no matter what your age. Parents are usually overjoyed to give their advice to their children. Sometimes it's tougher for children to take it as they get to be adults. But it does please parents when we ask and when we seek their advice. Sometimes I realize it pleases them greatly to still be involved in your life, even though you may be 50 years old. Of course, if you're 21 and not living in your parents' home, you don't have to follow the advice. I mean, that's understandable. But I'd be cautious about not following it. They have lived a little longer than you have. Sometimes it's wise to at least pay attention to what their advice was or to seek it out, even if you have to decide whether or not you follow it. But what do you do when your parents are not due respect? Now, notice I'm clarifying the word respect versus honor. What do you do when your parents are not worthy of respect? By their behavior, by their actions, in some way they have been unworthy of respect. Maybe it's your opinion that they're not worthy. Perhaps they don't seem to care about you, and they don't seem to care about your accomplishments and never give you any encouragement. And maybe you've been very discouraged by a parent in the past. Perhaps one or the other of your parents perhaps has a problem with drugs or alcohol and has maybe been abusive in some way or whatever it is. Sometimes we may find ourselves with parents who are divorced, sometimes separated. Perhaps we've grown up only knowing one parent. There are all kinds of situations. One of our parents was absent frequently, and another parent may be abusive when present. There are all kinds of situations that people have been in. Whatever the situation, maybe you've been hurt in some way or you find that it's hard to have anything to do with them, hard to respect them. We have to do two things as a Christian. Two things we have to do. Number one, we don't allow bitterness to develop and gain control. We do not allow bitterness to develop or gain control in our lives. It can be very damaging to us to become bitter about what a parent may have done. It can fester like an infection, and it can destroy us emotionally. And that leads to, and is part of, point number two, which is that we must learn to forgive. We must learn to forgive. Those who are in this situation have to learn how to forgive their parents for some of the things they've done. Whether their parents or parents, whether their parents or parents both repent of it or not, we have to forgive them. You still have to forgive them. And it did not, I did not say condone what they have done. I just said we have to be willing to forgive them. You must forgive. Let's go to Matthew 5. These are the two things we have to do. We don't let bitterness take control, and we have to forgive. Matthew 5, verse 23. I want to read verses 23 and 24 of Matthew 5. It says, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Clearly, we have to forgive. We have to go reconcile, whether it be parents or brothers and sisters or friends or whatever. We do need to reconcile. And if we expect God to forgive us, we have to be willing to forgive our parents, too, in abusive situations. It was not easy for them to rear us. If we expect to learn how to forgive our children, we must also learn how to forgive our parents. Both we have to do. For you to forgive them is a cleansing process. It is a beneficial process, and it will take some time. Don't expect to sit down and forgive an abusive parent in one day. It isn't going to happen. It takes time. But we have to start toward working toward it through the emotions and through the feelings of it and deal with it in time. And certainly in prayer, ask God to help us to get there to that point where we can do that. Remember, you're not excusing what was done. You know, forgiveness is not necessarily excusing what they have done. Just as God, our Father, and Jesus Christ did for us, they don't excuse our sins. They may forgive our sins, but they don't necessarily excuse what we've done, and we can't be excused for the things we do. But God can forgive, and we have to be willing to do that with a parent as well. Jesus Christ forgave those who crucified and tortured him, and he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And sometimes that's what parents have done. They simply didn't understand what they were doing. Honoring abusive parents does not mean you have to respect them. There is a difference between honor and respect. You don't have to respect what they do or how they behave, but you can still honor them. We've talked about the fifth commandment. And we've examined some of the things that have to do with honoring, like being thankful, like communicating, sharing, being considerate, forgiving, being helpful, being optimistic and positive, and also asking for their advice. All of those things are part of honoring our parents. And sometimes we have to do some of those things in dealing with abusive parents too, whether we realize it or not, or whether we want to or not. And there's also the aspect of praying for them, too, especially for parents who have been abusive, that they will ultimately see some of the things they've done and they will repent. Some are worthy of our respect and perhaps a few are not, but they are all deserving of our honor. And God asks us to do that in honoring them. As the fifth commandment says, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God gives you. God promises long life to those who honor their parents. We have to ask the question. Now it remains to be seen. Are we willing to obey the fifth commandment from God? Will we give honor to our God by honoring our parents? I hope so, brethren. May each of you have a long life as a result.